Hi, I'm Lori Jones, President and CEO of Avasec Communications and host of Strategy Cast. Join me and my guests, innovators, disruptors, and visionaries, as we explore bold and brave marketing strategies that help you transform, scale, and grow your brand. Join me on this episode of Strategy Cast as we explore the intersection of ethics and strategy. With a blend of public health proficiency and marketing insight, my guest, Erica Ballard of Bitewell, guides us through the importance of fostering ethical business practices and meeting our customers' cravings and authenticity. We cover a broad range of topics, including the significance of personal growth, the elements of effective communication, and the key components for aligning your marketing efforts with substantial business triumphs. Don't forget to check out the most recent issue of the Strategy Cast newsletter on strategycast.com. Just like this episode, it's full of inspiration and a ton of ideas that will elevate your strategies and marketing know-how.
A competitive edge starts with strategy, and strategy starts with knowing how to develop one. Strategy Cast is a leading marketing podcast that serves up strategic insights, trends, and tips to help separate your business from the pack. Tune in weekly as host Lori Jones interviews bold marketing leaders who have priceless wisdom and are willing to share. Each episode explores cutting-edge approaches that have proven instrumental in transforming brands into industry trailblazers.
Welcome to Strategy Cast. I am so excited to have Erica Ballard join the show today. Erica is with Bitewell. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
I tell you, I am so excited to chat with you today. We've got a real meaty topic. The topic is all about how business strategies can really fail marketing strategies and how to recognize those along the way. Before we get there, tell us about your journey and a little bit more about Bitewell.
Sure. So Bitewell is the world's first digital food pharmacy. And so what that essentially means is we are an online health store that personalizes food to the individual's body, health goals, and needs. Wow. So it's really interesting in that way. We're really taking into account personalized nutrition because we believe that is the only way food as medicine can truly work. And so it's a really interesting product, really interesting place to be, very exciting for me because my background to leading the marketing of Bitewell was a squiggly line get here. So I started my journey in public health 15 years ago, working in health communication and all those type of things, working in employee-based wellness, went to Tufts Medical, got my master's in health communication, did all the things, and then saw how we treated food and people in this country and decided to go be a health coach for 6-7 years on my own. And you can't survive as an entrepreneur without good marketing. And so I did well for myself. And after my first kid, I had, figured out health coaching. You're kind of like, okay, I'm ready for all the challenges, apparently. Yeah. And so met with the CEO. I was really excited, had the food as medicine, nutrition background, and ended up at Bitewell. And I've been here for almost a year now.
I love it. You know, as we're diving into your background and then this very meaty topic, it's interesting to me, and obviously you're incredibly savvy. It's interesting to me, in your own mind, deciding that this was going to be a good fit for you based on the business strategy that was in place. So in your situation, I'm sure it was much as interviewing the CEO as she was interviewing you, because again, the whole theme for today's podcast and video cast is how sometimes when the marketing and business strategy aren't aligned, nothing works and marketing always gets blamed. So what advice? I mean, let's just face facts. We do.
It's so true.
What is going through your mind as you're walking into this interview? I mean, first ever is truly amazing, but there's got to be a lot of strategy behind that to make sure that it truly is the right market fit.
Yeah. When I was thinking through it, as you're saying, and here's what's coming through my head is we get really excited about a lot of things, right? Like I was like, oh my God, this company, it's so amazing. But what I really wanted to know was like, where are we going? What are we doing? What are we building? And what do you need to get there? And that's what you need from a marketing standpoint. What does the company need to go from point A to point B? Because the reality is, and I've said this many times to our CEO, is like, I can't market a bad product. Like, right. I can't.
Because because there are some bad products that have a huge market share.
Yes.
So there's the ethical side of what you're talking about. And then there's just tons of marketing dollars that get shoved behind it.
And it's, for me, it's both.
Yeah.
Having worked in public health, having helped people, like when I was a health coach, I was the last stop on the train. Mm-hmm. Everyone had tried all of the things that you're talking about, right? All of the unethical marketed health ideas is what I'll call them. So it was like, one, I really had to believe that they knew what they were talking about when it came to food as medicine. And then also I needed to know that the product was worthwhile because having, again, worked in public health for a while, we always think that we're doing our best in public health. And sometimes our outcome is not as intended, not as intended.
Right. I think that's hard. One of the things that, you said it, we get so excited. I get so excited about every new product or solution or idea that comes across our desk. And I really believe that it is something that's marketable and that it's something that really can succeed. And it dawned on me about 20 years ago that I needed to be looking at the company financials to figure out if there was an ARR and if it was scalable in order to get to the point that we could help them grow. Mm-hmm. And so in the startup world, it's sometimes a wing and a prayer, right? I mean, it truly is. And one of the things that I think is remarkable here is that your background, you knew what was broken in such a big way that that's automatically the glue that attracted you to Bitewell to realize there really was going to be a good market fit for this.
Absolutely. And I would make the argument, customers are really savvy nowadays. And the way that what we have created really is talking to the person that understands and wants to do something with food.
Right.
So for me, that's a really exciting place to be for all of this. But to your point, man, I had never worked in tech beforehand.
Yeah.
It's a journey, girl. Like the amount of pivots and swings, and switches. But because we do have a North Star of what we're actually trying to accomplish, the pivots are manageable.
Yep.
But to your point, a lot of the pivots have to do with not marketing, but with business needs. And so that has been a really interesting evolution over here.
It really is. And I think where it all starts is the objectives of the company, right? And truly, what are the objectives and are they truly achievable? And at face value, I think because we want to believe so much in what we do day in and day out, that we want to believe that they're achievable. What advice do you have for our listeners today on how they can really determine if what the CEO, the VC community, the investment bank, whatever it is that they're saying is truly something that can get done?
I'm laughing because someone that we know, Rosanna, I was just on a call with her earlier, and someone, our growth marketer who I just hired, he said to me, Erica, I love the coulds and the hows, but you're really focused on the shoulds and the whys. Like, and I was like, that's a really nice way to say that sometimes I ran on people's parades. But I think that's, to answer your question, that's how we understand what's truly viable. Like, given our objectives as a company, we could do this. We could do that. That is possible. That is something we could do. But should we? And why?
Yeah.
Sometimes being a marketer, we don't feel like we can have that conversation because we're just in marketing. We're just in marketing.
Right.
But I will say our CEO was in marketing and is very clear that marketing should be driving a lot of business strategy because we are the eyes and ears of what's happening on the ground. We're picking up the feedback just as much, if not more so, than customer service. And so because of that, we should be really thinking through where can we go. But that's how I think we figure out what's viable is like, what are the goals that we agreed on? Should we? Why? Why would we expand? And then given everything that we're hearing, is what you're saying truly, truly, truly feasible? Because we talked to the people that buy the product and we can let you know if you're willing to listen to us.
Well, and what that takes is research. Mm-hmm. And my listeners have heard this a million times from me. The number one reason, actually number two reason companies don't succeed in the startup area is they lack research. Mm-hmm. And they lack the research with product market fit, like we were talking about, but also who the buyer is, what the behaviors are surrounding that buyer, and, you know, a litany of other things, but it all revolves around research. What have you done to assure that the research you're conducting is meeting the objectives, the business strategy of the business to be able to be in a position to say yay or nay?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So plus side for my company is that I am trained in research. Like I am like trained in survey and focus groups. I'm a published researcher. So I have like all of that stuff.
You've got that DNA to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah. But the process for me is always looking at what are our objectives and then what do we actually need to, what questions do we need to ask? What research needs to be done? What data do we need to pull in order to verify whether or not these objectives are a possible, like something that we can meet?
Right.
What I'm hearing you saying is that a lot of, and this is my own lens that I'm filtering through, is we run with gut a lot in tech. This is my gut.
And dare I say female marketers too.
Yeah.
We've got this gut about us.
Yeah.
That is truly remarkable when it comes to getting things done.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful thing that still needs to be backed by data. And we have to be, the other thing that we build in here is, and it sounds so like, what's the word? Like it's duh. Like, of course you do this. But we check in regularly against the data, right? And if this is working and against the objectives, like this is what we said we wanted. You're saying this. Okay, are we going to do that? Because this is what we said. Nope. Okay, pivot back here. And we are just constantly making sure that the research is part of the growth process instead of doing it once, which I think is what a lot of companies do. They'll research once and then decide we have it and we'll go. And it's like, no, we have to be constantly looking at our research, the market research, other research just out there in general to make sure that as we move along, we're going in the right direction.
Yeah. You know, an area that we, if I had, oh my gosh, a penny for every time I was told we don't have any competition, I would be like a gazillionaire. And it truly is that one of, you know, in a strategy session when asking about competition, we don't have any competition. I think what people believe is their product just so good, there isn't any competition, or because it is a first of a kind, there isn't any competition, but we're still changing habits. It could be apathy. It could be your competition could be doing nothing. I mean, I don't mean a competitor could be doing nothing. A main behavioral part of competition could be not making a decision, not doing anything is a mental competitor. So people just, they don't realize these sort of things when they're getting to the point of positioning. And let's face facts, when we are coming up with positioning strategies, understanding the alternative point of view or the alternatives out there, again, including apathy or not doing anything, it's really important. Why don't people spend enough time on that?
You drink your own Kool-Aid. I mean, I know that's like... I know that's a silly thing to say and like it almost feels too simple, but that's what I see happen all the time. People are just drinking their own Kool-Aid. For us in our space, to your point, to illustrate like how we think about it, is we're in the food as medicine space. Mm-hmm. But we are competing with the weight loss space. That's what we're competing with. Not because we are direct competitors, but because people see food as a weight loss mechanism and the weight loss brings them the results of their A1C, their BMI or not BMI, blood pressure, cholesterol levels, et cetera. And it's like, actually weight is a lag indicator to your health, like truly. And so, but this is what we have to be thinking about on our end when we go out to market is that people don't see food as medicine. They don't see it as like a quote unquote true health tool. Some do, but most see it as a weight loss tool that then gets them health. And I think that because of that, we have to market a little bit differently and we have to keep these competitors in mind. But to your point, if we didn't think like that, if we didn't understand how emotional food is, how like built into the fabric of culture food is, we would just say there is no competitor because right. we have the world's first digital food pharmacy. But we're not competing against ourselves. We are competing with the emotional component of food, the mindset of food, the beliefs around food. And that's how we have to be thinking about things as marketers too, because you have to be visionary and you have to believe that you're going to win as a CEO or a president or a co-founder. Like you have to believe, you have to be borderline delusional to run a tech company. And so it's our jobs as marketers to bring this truth,
yeah.
right? To help
I love that.
Our leaders think, not sanely, but think like maybe you're a buyer or an end user.
How did you go about really getting into the mindset of the prospect? Because that, you know, back to research, it's something that's really important. And a lot of people, you know, in the old days, like, I don't know, 12 years ago, when we were all excited about developing personas, what we were reliant upon was our own intuition and an internal team's intuition on what it was going to take to understand behaviors. And we soon found out that was really flawed from a strategic standpoint because it was us saying what the customer is thinking and not enough asking the customer. And there are a lot of, avatars, personas, very flawed approaches that weren't working.
I love that you said that. We are actually undergoing some product updates. And this was the feedback I brought. Like, we are coming at it as us.
Yeah.
Not as our ICP. And that's it's not problematic, but it is problematic if we're trying to build a product for our ICP.
Right.
It was easy for me because I worked in the field, in this industry, for 6+ years. So, like, I heard the exact words.
Exactly.
I understood the journey they took, all those things. So that made my job. It's making my job.
You were a very, very good hire.
I was probably the right person for this job.
Yeah.
But what we do now, because I am removed from that component of it, is we do interviews, we do focus groups, but we run them like data scientists. So you got to ask good questions. You know what I mean? Like, so many people ask two questions in one.
Yeah. Give me an example of how you would approach it as a data scientist versus, you know, quite frankly, a marketer.
Yeah. So one, this sounds so silly. Okay. Just bear with me. One, we ask one question at a time. So yeah. A lot of what we see in marketing surveys is like, would you eat this and this? Would you eat this is question one.
Yeah.
Would you eat that is question two. Unless there was, question two might be something different depending if there was a different reason for asking an and question. But you never put two questions or two variables for the most part in any of your questions. So that's the first piece. And the second piece is we ask not what we hope to hear, right? Like, in a lot
of questions, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of our survey, like I see in surveys, is like, this is the answer we hope so that we can market testimonials on it. No, I need to know the answer to the question, this question. I need this not because it's going to be great marketing, because it's going to be great whatever. I need this because I need to know it in order to market appropriately. And so, like, those are two really big things that come up as I'm thinking through it. And then when we're doing focus groups, like if we're going to move into like focus groups, like we need to build in a cadence. Like we ask, like as marketers, we ask the most sporadic of questions. We'll go here and then we'll go to the left and then we'll go behind. And it's like people aren't linear per se. But there's a cadence and then there's a way that people's minds work. And think of, I'm like, it sounds so slick. Think of it like a human, like you're talking to a real human.
Right.
Like, and build your focus group around your questions around that versus, again, like, how many questions can we ask?
Well,
what information we can get.
And I think the other thing happens there, and you and I are strategists, so our tendency is to, when someone says something, even though it might be a little bit of a tangent, you want to be able to dive into it. Like if we're in a strategy session or an ideation or an innovation session, you want to be able to dive into it and probe a little bit deeper. So that's our tendency, to be able to pull out what is needed. But in a focus group, you should not, to your point, be translating that ability to think on your feet and ask probing questions, because it will throw the whole group off with the cadence of what you're talking about.
Yeah, people love to talk, myself included. Yeah. So like if you give them an opportunity to, they'll spin down that rabbit hole. But there are certain things that you're really after here.
Right.
And I really feel like when we write our surveys or anything like that, if we stay on track about what we need answered versus what we want to hear,
love it.
It enables us to get the data that actually helps not only move marketing forward, but honestly, the business forward. Yeah.
That's such incredible advice there. And again, actually, it's not again because I haven't said this, but it's that outside in thinking that really gets you to the point of asking the right questions versus that inside out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. another area, especially, well, I shouldn't say especially, even with some of our enterprise clients, we run into this, and that is the failing to adhere to the brand guidelines that you've just, you know, that the objectives, the strategy, the research, the audience, you know, everything has been built around. And we usually see it happening with graphic designers or content. And I mean, those are the two primary areas that we see, you know, crumbling of brand consistency happening when it comes to really maintaining the cadence and the strategy in place to make sure that we're moving on that upward trajectory. How do you maintain that with the brands you worked on?
I feel very fortunate because as you're saying that, I'm like, we don't have that issue here, which is really great. I think when hiring appropriately, I mean, hiring the right people makes that a lot easier.
Right.
So that's the first piece. And I think the second piece, again, I know that these answers seem so simple, but I feel like they are meant to be said, is having difficult conversations. When people don't do the thing you want them to do, or they're not following it along, you can't just brush it off.
Right.
Like for us, we are building a brand. Like we need brand awareness right now, being as young as we are. And so there are colors that have to be regularly used. There are words that have to be used. There's a tone that has to come up every single time. And we have to adhere to it. And when I don't see it, I have to say something, right? See something, say something. But we want to avoid conflict.
Yeah.
We want to not hurt people's feelings. We want to let people express themselves. No, you can express yourself after hours, man. Like you have, like, here's a box that you got to fit in.
This is the audience.
Yeah. And because there's so many like other things I could say, but I do think a lot of this comes down to our ability as not just a marketer, but as a leader, right? That we want to be able to have these conversations that say, hey, this isn't following through. What can we do? Or if you're very clear, I need you to do X, Y, Z.
Yeah. You know, I love the fact that you talked about being in the awareness phase. I think it's a long phase for a lot of brands. And what I have seen happen all too often is in a phase where we're really looking for data to help us drive decisions, we quite often overanalyze the data and make knee-jerk decisions in reactions based on something that we may not have given enough time to really understand if it's sticky because the brand awareness is so low. How do you go about really having those conversations with the team, a lot of this is just gut and wisdom too, quite frankly, to just say, no, I think we need to give it a little bit more time versus no, let's like a click-through rate is one of those KPIs that so many knee-jerk decisions are made on. And I think we're doing the campaign, the company, the business marketing alliance a disservice quite often.
Yeah, there's a few things. One, I check my ego. So we have KPIs. My KPIs look great. They look great because we have a small brand awareness. So I will be the first to be like, listen, these email rates, open rates look amazing, but I can't toot my own horn because here's how many people are on the email list. So let's just keep this in mind. So one, I keep my ego in check. The other component is one of my values as a human is being really honest. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very honest about how I feel in these conversations because like you said, it is a gut check. It is wisdom. It is something that sometimes you do just know. You can't explain why, but you just know because you've been doing this long enough. So there's that piece. And then the third piece is I understand the dynamics of the people making the decisions. Yeah. So in our C-suite, we have three distinct personalities. And so I understand who likes to hear what, not to manipulate them, but to help them understand in their language why I need more time or why marketing needs more time in order to get from point A to point B. Because if I can speak to them in a way that they can hear me, which is what we do as marketers, then they can push back appropriately and or tell me why we need to make a decision on this faster than I would like to make a decision on this.
Yeah, I love that. That's just chock full of incredible insights. I'm going to go off on a total tangent for a minute because we were just talking about this over our lunch hour in the agency. And that is the big uproar right now with ChatGPT and the quote from the CEO. I can't remember his name right now. I'll look it up on my phone real quick. He recently came out a week or two ago and was talking about the fact that strategy, creative marketing as we know it today is going to disappear. The need for agencies is going to disappear. And what we really have come down to is wisdom. I'm not convinced that machine learning and AI in particular is able to capture the wisdom that 15, 25 years, 35 years captures in order to just say, no, I know it, this is not going to work or this is going to work. Where's your head regarding all of that right now?
Yes, I know what you're talking about. And I'm like, okay, whatever. There's not 1 ounce of me that can believe that it will get rid of agencies or marketing or any of that. Like, yes, it can help strengthen our writing. Yes, it can make our research easier. Yes, it can help me when I just cannot figure out how to write a headline. I do like you, like when you're just like, again, I've written 7 of these today. I can't even. But we've seen what AI pictures and graphics look like. They don't always turn out the way that they should. And yes, there's this gut component of it, but there's also a human element to what we're selling to humans.
I totally agree.
And machine learning, while it can be extremely helpful, and I won't knock it, there are some humans are emotional and they have feelings and they have like you just need a human to talk to another human. That is, and storytelling is my favorite part about marketing. And we as humans do it best because we understand the emotions, we know where to pull. And so I can hear it, but I think any company that actually believes it is going to see very fast that it won't work because everyone wants to cut marketing. Everyone wants to give marketing shit, excuse my language, like all of it. But we are the first people you come to when you need to do to bring in money, to understand the customer. Like, and ChatGPT or AI, they're not going to give you the insight that you need because, like I just said, like I know how to talk to you.
Yeah. And imagine, so obviously there's so much authenticity surrounding the brand that you're bringing to market, right? I mean, it's got to feel very, very real. and approachable and touchable for someone to decide to want to be able to say, yes, I need this solution. So imagine an AI generated image of someone who is not using the product and what that does for authenticity. Even from an ethics standpoint, I could not push a message out like that, knowing that it truly wasn't a customer and saying that it was. There's an ethics issue here that I think is a real issue for the whole industry.
Yeah, I agree. And again, it's like I can hear it. And I know I've seen people fire agencies already. I've seen people try to do the AI thing. And even we've tried to some extent. And we're like, these are not good. These are not as good as the people we have in-house. And it, you could try it, but it's just not going to work. It's just not.
I agree. Let's transition to having some of these fierce conversations that you've been talking about. I mean, you're authentic and really honest, and it's in your DNA to just be really upfront and forward with people. But a lot of people don't have that. And having those conversations with even a CEO and questioning a business strategy and its effect on all components of sales and marketing, quite frankly, not just marketing, can be really tough. What advice do you have for our listeners today for those that might need to have that tough conversation and they just haven't had it yet?
So I'm going to give a tactical advice, and then I'm going to give you the advice that got me, the stuff that actually got me here. So I can only use the tactical stuff when I did the second line of stuff. So frameworks are really helpful.
Yeah.
So for me, when I have conversations, I like to put them in frameworks. So for me, what that looks like is, okay, every meeting, here's what we're going to try to get out of it. Here are the agenda bullet points. Okay. And always bringing it back, because that framework works for me. We have, our CEO used to work at Bridgewater. So there are certain things like diagnostics, pop the cork sessions. They all follow a formula that enable us to have unemotional conversations. So I think these frameworks from a tactical standpoint are really, really helpful, particularly when you get that like gut feel, you know, so that's the first one.
Explain real quickly what a pop the cork session is to our audience.
Yeah, a pop the cork session is like when you need to air things out.
Yeah,
so if there's someone in the office where you're just, you can't seem to get on the same page, you've been trying it for a while, you're complaining to your manager, they're complaining to their manager, they're like, let's just have a pop the cork session. And so there's a framework where we have a third party comes in, not HR, can be, but like doesn't have to be, sits, asks questions, gets to the bottom of like what is actually going on with you two, and then you just move on.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah.
It's very helpful.
Love it. Yeah.
But what I did to get here, honestly, is like the non-work, the therapy, the somatic healings, the meditation, like all the stuff that helps you understand your conditioning, how your trauma affects how you show up at work and in the world, like all of that, we're like, okay, whatever. That's like nice to have stuff. If you want to show up at work as your full person, as authentically as you want to be, like you need to do your own inner work, because otherwise you're going to run up against your own trauma, your own stories, your own beliefs without ever knowing it. The language I use is, you got to make your unconscious conscious. And I don't care how you do that. Just go do it.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I would imagine that in most situations, the CEO is going to be very, very open to wanting to hear that feedback, because the last thing we need is, well, I've got a list of them. I mean, Theranos. I mean, look at what happened there. Had people really been able to have those conversations with the then CEO, can you imagine where that company would be? I mean, there was so many unethical things that happened with that company, bottom line, but my gosh. And if you take a look at Kodak, Blockbuster, BlackBerry, Sears, Nokia, Yahoo, JCPenney, all situations where marketing was really given something to market, where those first fierce conversations did not take place with product development, with the C-suite regarding this is not going to work.
We had, she's a creative. So she was initially on the marketing team and now she's in product. Just to your point, there was something happening with our product. And over dinner with a CEO one day, just finally said, hey,
yep,
this thing. And I started laughing when I came into work the next day because I was like, did you just see what you spurred? She spurred a sprint to like revamp so much of what we do because she had.
Thank God she spoke up.
Because she spoke up and we have created an even better product because of her. And she's not the COO. She's not even an executive on the team. She was just someone who was willing to tell the truth. And now our product is exponentially better.
Because I love of that. Her.
Yeah. And it is, I love that she did it. And I think it takes a lot of guts to do it. But because of her, everything's better.
Yeah.
Everything's better.
It's like that, you know, that person in the corner of the office that overhears everything happening every minute of every day. And then they're the one that finally raises their hand and says, oh, I've got an idea. And it's the clinchpin to ultimately creating the success for the company to be able to continue on or innovate the product that much further, whatever it might be. I love the fact that you've got an environment that allows people to speak up like that. Not every environment's like that. The DNA of the culture that you're explaining has got to be very, very special. Talk to us a little bit about that mindset that allows problem solving in such a unique way.
Yeah, I mean, it really does start from the top down. We have team meetings that our CEO actually attends and runs and is part of. I know it sounds silly when you say that, but like, that is not every place, right? And we have at the end of every single team meeting a kudos. And so that means like for 5 to 10 minutes, we are just like, hey, Will did an amazing job. Thank you so much, Mal, for blah, blah, blah. And so we are constantly making sure that we are saying thank you publicly to people who have impacted us. So we're all able to see who does what and who to go to and learning strengths as we go. And again, to the CEO's credit, like it's a very open door policy. Yeah. You can open her as long as she's not in a meeting, like you can open her door and talk to her and she'll come out and talk. And same with she's a co-founder and same with our other co-founder, the chief growth officer, very accessible and they implement too. So we're just all working together towards a common goal and they were in it since the beginning. I mean, startups are a little different, right? But like they were grinding it out before we were grinding it out. So they know.
Yeah, they absolutely do. We've just got a couple minutes left. Any final thoughts for our listeners today on how making sure that business and marketing strategies are aligned can really impact ultimately their job and the future of the business?
My final thought is based on what you had mentioned of like, really don't be afraid. Or do it scared, I should say. Do it scared. Bring up the thoughts that you are having with whether it's a manager, a CEO, depending on the size of your company, because they are drinking their own Kool-Aid. They are thinking everything's okay unless someone else tells them. And you really can't market a bad product. Like ethically, whatever, all that aside.
I agree.
Like,
yeah.
If you know the product does not deliver what it says it does, say something. Because it's not even like you're going to get in trouble and lose your job and blah, 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 blah. But if you believe in where you are and you came on because you believe that this is going to help people in any way, like really figure out how to say the thing scared. Because if you're thinking it, I guarantee at least 5 to 10 other people are thinking it in your company. And you can help move forward the business in a way that will make you really proud and then will make the people around you really happy.
Yeah, I love that. And with that note, what is the best way for our audience to get a hold of you?
Sure. I used to play on the internet a lot. Now I don't. So if you ever have any...
What kids will do to you.
Yeah, listen. So I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me at Erica Ballard. But also if you have any questions, follow up erica@bitewell.com. Feel free to email me. I will always reach back out.
That's great. We appreciate you so much, Erica. Thank you for your appearance on StrategyCast.
Thank you so much, Lori. I loved being here.
And for those of you who want to get a hold of me, go ahead and email me at Lori, L-O-R-I, at strategycast.com. I look forward to hearing from you.
That's a wrap. Thanks for joining us on today's show. We hope your strategic brains are spinning with new ideas and bold inspiration that will elevate your strategies and marketing know-how.